So it's Ed Maher here with you this morning, and I'm joined by Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Ed.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
I feel like you and me are probably going to be in a little bit of trouble for not being, out taking our respective mothers out to breakfast or something like that this morning, but... You know, we're on a mission.
We're taking all the mothers out this morning.
That's right.
With this content.
We're going to be shouting out to moms throughout the show today, mm-hmm. because Mother's Day, you know, it falls once a year, but, we've always got to show some love to the moms.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us about your mom? Give your mom a shout out.
Happy Mother's Day, Ellen McDermott Davidson, a retired steward for the Chicago Teachers Union, mm-hmm. longtime
Very
teacher,
cool.
educator, good, strong unionist. She's the best. Love you, Mom.
What was the most important thing your mom ever taught you?
Oh,
tough question.
That is a tough one. Tell the truth.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yep.
Best I can tell, you're either a very truthful man or really, really good at covering it up.
I'm a pretty good liar, too.
Well done. I'll throw a shout out to my mom, Jane Maher. She was a nurse for her entire career. Very sage woman. She taught me that... integrity is all you have in this life, and without integrity you don't have anything else. So love you, Mom. I know you're listening. You always do. You're the best. So this show is going out dedicated to all the moms. That includes moms, it includes grandmas, aunts, stepmoms, foster moms, people who can't be moms, people who want to be moms, anybody out there who's filling that hole and filling that place in somebody's life. Happy Mother's Day to you.
And especially to our union moms.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the ones that are out there working hard every day.
Raising kids, working out there in the field.
Yeah.
Respect.
Love you.
Yeah.
One of the most famous union moms are the moms in the labor movement, of course, Phil.
Mother Jones.
That would be Mother Jones.
And we've got news on that front. There's going to be a memorial for her downtown, I believe, at Water Tower.
Okay.
There's going to be a statue that
nice.
A lot of the building trades, I'm pretty sure yours contributed to, as did mine, will be one of the very first statues honoring a female legacy in the city. So very cool. Obviously, Mother Jones is the grandmother of agitating,
mm-hmm.
I think is her nickname, and... Led coal miners, led textile workers. I mean, you name it. She was there from the get-go. And shout out to Dave Rathke, friend of the show, who's kind of leads the effort on getting Mother Jones the recognition she deserves, both Chicago, nationally, internationally.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. So we've got an exciting show coming up today. We have the diversity coordinator for the Mid-America Council of Regional Carpenters. Mac RC, I totally butchered that, but I'll get it right. I will get it right one of these days. We have the diversity director, Jonathan Jones, coming on. We'll be talking a little bit about AI and technology and robotics and
yep.
you know how it's affecting the writer's strike right now, what that means for labor, and kind of some of the other fights that workers have had historically with technology,
yeah.
robots, and now the differences I think the robots are thinking.
Check in on that writer's strike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then at the end of the show, we'll be busting a union myth. We'll be bringing back our much beloved and requested union myth of the
week. There's a lot out there.
There really
are. A lot of misinformation.
So we'll be touching on that. But stick with us. We're going to be back after this break with Jonathan Jones, the diversity coordinator for the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
Is Mr. T going to take us out?
Can we get Mr. T to take us out? There he is. All right, stay with us, everybody. 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back to The Workers' Mic on WGN 720. I'm Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Along with me is host Ed Maher from the Operating Engineers Local 150. And we have a special guest with us, Ed, who I'm very, very proud to bring on.
Me too.
You're going to love him. I think our audience is really going to enjoy his perspective as well. On the line here is Jonathan Jones, the new Director of Diversity for the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good morning, Jonathan. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Eddie. Yeah, I really appreciate the invite.
So, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? You're the Diversity Coordinator at the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
I grew up in inner city of Chicago, Inglewood community. Went to Chicago Public Schools. In my junior year of high school, I was approached by a counselor about opportunities in the trades, and I thought I'd pursue it, and I did. Did a pre-apprenticeship program. I guess back then they had a program where they went and allowed high school students to attend a pre-apprenticeship program at Washburn Trade
School. Washburn, for sure.
Yeah, for 2 years, and you receive credits towards graduation. So I took advantage of that program, and you know, transitioned from that program into the took the test and transitioned to the Carpenters Union.
Oh, very cool. It's interesting that you bring up Washburn. I mean, it's one of the trade schools that you know, created an entire generation of construction workers in Chicago. And later on, maybe I'll come back to that, because we could sure use places like Washburn in Chicago today. Tell us a little bit about what you do on a day-to-day basis, just trying to attract people to the trades, to the carpenters.
Yes, there's so many great opportunities in the Carpenters Union. I mean, our scope of work is so broad. Mm-hmm. We could really advertise to a wide variety of people that are interested in different whatever scope. I mean, most folks don't understand that even at the airports, the conveyor belts that move the luggage, that's all carpenter work.
Interesting.
So we have underwater welders, we have cabinet makers. So the scope of work in carpentry is so broad, and the benefits that we have are wonderful. And most folks go to a 4-year college and have to pay back so many thousands of dollars of college debt. Well, we pay you to be a part of our program.
Right. We talk about it a lot on the show about how the economics of unions are such a good deal for workers, and sometimes it's just a matter of getting the word out to people and letting them know that there are opportunities. You know, it sounds like you were fortunate to have a guidance counselor who knew about this, knew about these opportunities.
Yes.
You know, but so many don't. It's just this kind of college for all model of education, and there are an awful lot of very, very smart people who are not cut out for college. I went to college with some of those people, and you know, so you were fortunate, but the kids who aren't now, you know, how do you reach out to those folks? Like, how do you get to them?
Well, I mean, people are not moved by what offends them; they only are moved by what affects them. Mm-hmm. So we have to find a way to show them how being a carpenter is going to have a positive impact and effect on their lives. And so part of that is actually explaining to them the flexibility of construction field, what we offer, and also letting them know that we're in need of their talent.
Right.
That's a really underused word, you know, when someone reaches out to you and they say, you know, I got this opportunity over here, take it or leave it.
Right.
It sounds a lot different when you say, hey, you know, you're a very talented person, you offer a lot. We need you over here with Mid-America Carpenters.
Well, yeah, especially all the infrastructure work that's come out just at the federal level. I mean, at the state level, we fund capital investments pretty highly. But just between the bipartisan infrastructure plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, and some of these other federal acts, I think we're going to see $4 trillion in construction work over the next 10 years. And we're going to need to find more people to do that.
Yeah,
And I think
$50 billion in Illinois, right?
Yeah.
Just in the capital plan?
Yeah, just in the bipartisan plan. So that's roads, bridges, you know, buildings. But, you know, this is a great opportunity for work. There's going to be work for everybody for the next 10 years and a lot of opportunities to get in unions and people to create that foundation for family and, you know, wealth for the next generation. But we're going to have to look in places that we haven't looked before to try to attract people and, you know, try to just communicate to everybody, regardless of race, gender, or anything else, that there's a place for you in the building trades.
Yeah, right. Jonathan, tell us a little bit about how, you know, you came up in the trade, you wore the bags, then you became a representative, and now, you know, you're the director of diversity, and a lot of that involves recruiting. And maybe you could talk a little bit about this position, you know, why it was created, and why this is such an important focus of not just the carpenters, I think Ed would agree about, for trades everywhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. So being a proud member for 32 years and 22 years as a full-time representative, you know, we've been able to really hit the ground running. Obviously, been African-American, working in the trades, working all over the state of Illinois. In my coming up through the apprenticeship, I have a very unique view of our field. And also, I'm an example that if you put your mind to it, you can make it through and really make a great career for yourself. It is vitally important also because the other part of it is that we are in need of diverse talent. And that's what the world is coming to. And I sometimes kind of look at the word diversity. Diversity is a wonderful word, but the issue has been that there has been a lot of talented people, but the doors haven't been open in the past. But now, as we start recruiting, we understand that talent is in every segment of our population. And we want to reach out to that talent and invite them in and say, hey, we're in need of your what you bring to the table. Mid-Americans in particular, our EST, Gary Pernar, has had the vision, and he brought and he said, hey, we need to do something. We need to do outreach and bring more folks of color, females, into the trades because they bring a unique talent to the industry. And so that's what I've been set out to do, and I'm really, really happy about it. We've been getting some real good traction.
No, that's a really good point. And I've said for a lot of years with the operating engineers that, you know, we have a growing population of female members. And, you know, when I talk to them about what they do at work, it's interesting that sometimes they just approach, you know, difficulties or different decisions at work very differently than men do. And I think what you're saying about diversity being a strength is absolutely right. And the more different perspectives that you can have sitting at the same table, the stronger you're going to be.
Right. Jonathan, and I know we've talked about this a little bit before, it's not just within the unions and the trades themselves where there's a real focus on increasing diversity. It seems to be taking hold in the industry as well. I know several of our contractors, you know, they're putting out
they're putting
out videos on their websites, on their social media, elevating diverse members of you know, their workforce.
Yes, absolutely. I was appointed by our EST to sit on the Association of General Contractors DEI board. The contractors are definitely understanding the importance of it. The request is coming from many of our end users, with the federal government, with the state, with a lot of private vendors. They are understanding that they've been missing out on a huge talent pool of individuals, for whatever reason, and they want to, make sure that they take advantage of that and, really bring in this next generation of workers that's going to take their companies to the next level. There's been many research, much research has been done that shows that companies that have diverse talent are companies that have a better cutting edge and their profitability is higher. So again, people are not moved by what offends them, they're only moved by what affects them. So companies obviously are looking at their bottom line, and so this right here is there is no negatives to it. The other thing, part of it too, is that the world is a very diverse place. In the United States, the beauty of the United States is its diversity. And as you look at the military, it's diverse, it's working well. You look at the city, it's diverse, it's working well. Mm-hmm. You look at different places around our society that has embraced this, it has taken those places to a whole nother level. So, understanding the importance of diversity is paramount.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, as I said earlier, you know, so many people in generations where maybe their dad wasn't in a union or their uncle wasn't in a union, they don't know about unions, don't know about how to get in, and maybe kind of subscribe to the old myth that you have to know somebody to get in, which really today couldn't be less accurate. Just because every union is looking for the most skilled people. So for those folks that maybe don't know how to get in and want to learn about more, and I'm talking to all the listeners out there who, you know, your ears are perking up maybe at this opportunity, how can people find out more about opportunities within the Carpenters Union?
They can go on our website. We have information there. They could apply at our school in Elk Grove Village, and we also have a Chicago school. And being Mid America, as representing over 52,000 members, mm-hmm. we have schools throughout the state. We have a school way down in Belleville. I might be mispronouncing that. You might have to help me out there.
You got it, Jonathan. You nailed it.
Okay, yes.
Great. Shout out to our Belleville listeners.
What up, Belleville?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So we're outreaching. Anybody that want to come in and be a carpenter, we welcome you with open arms. It's a great career, good retirement, a pension. And I will say that again, pension seems to be a dying breed these days.
Thanks for repeating.
Many organizations, great benefits, dental, $2 million health care, 50% of journeyman wages after just 9 weeks of training at our pre-apprenticeship school. So a journeyman makes about $53 an hour and some change.
Wow.
So in 9 weeks, you make 50% of that, and in 4 years, you can make the total amount of that.
That's
so it
money.
Is a great opportunity, yeah. But there is pros and cons to it. I mean, the pro is it's a great wage. It's a retirement. The con could be you're working outside and outdoors, and that might be a pro for a lot of people. You're working in an element. So, yeah, I mean, I who wouldn't want to be a carpenter?
Well, I always...
Amen, brother.
I always say, you know, when people look at the person waving a flag out on the highway or sitting on a piece of equipment, they say, oh, that's easy. They're not saying that when it's 40 below zero or when it's 100 degrees about the people laying asphalt. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for coming on. Now, one last thing. As you know, it's Mother's Day. So I want to give you the opportunity to shout out to your mom if you want to, if she's listening.
Oh, absolutely. Mom, Marjorie Jones, happy Mother's Day to you. I love you. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I am forever indebted.
Right on. Well said.
Nice work, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you again so much. We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher from the Operating Engineers Local 150, and I'm here with Phil Davidson from Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
You nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm one out of three so far. but we're back here on Mother's Day, and we've got a lot to get into. Again, shout out to Ken Edwards, who is out on assignment as always. I'm not sure where he is. I think he's in Texas trying to rope some cattle. He's training for the rodeo or something like that. I don't know.
He always keeps me guessing, man.
You know what? Again, he's got a lot of interesting hobbies.
He's a fisherman. He's a cattle wrangler. I mean, what can't this guy do?
Ken's a rodeo man, so it's important to know that. But shout out to you, Ken. So one of the things that's been going on recently, and frankly, I'm surprised that it hasn't been getting more coverage, is this writer's strike, the Writers Guild of America on strike. I mean, there are a lot of folks out there that I bet if you don't watch late night television, you might not even know that this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But the strikes
started,
they're
all on reruns now, so maybe
right. It started on May 1st. And last week we had an executive board member of the Writers Guild on to tell us a little bit more about some of the issues, you know, the economics, the concerns about automation and things like ChatGPT and other bots. But I was reading, you know, this started on May 1st, so it's been going on about 2 weeks now. And by the second day of the strike, the studios and the creators like Netflix and NBC and companies of that like had lost about $100 billion in market cap on their stock prices over concerns about the strike and profitability. And
that was by day two?
By day two, wow. their collective stock prices were down by $100 billion. And the Writers Guild responded to that, saying that if they got every single thing on their wish list for this contract, it would have cost 5% of what was lost on day one of the strike. So, I mean, I think it puts it into, you know, it puts it into perspective. And, you know, the studios are not showing any kind of any kind of motivation.
I heard this is going to be a long war.
The last one, I forget how long the last one was in 2008. 8 months. I'm getting 8 months from our talented group from Da Vinci Street that does our YouTube show or YouTube broadcast. So 8 months is what the last one went, and it sounds like the writers are digging in for a fight. And to be honest, I think they, you know,
I mean, for their survival,
right?
I mean, you have to. They can't capitulate one inch, or they're done.
Well, right. I mean, yeah. the difference and technology in Union land, and you know, the fight against technology or advancement is nothing new. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's you know, back in the 19th century, the textile workers used to sabotage machinery, you know, to stop companies from replacing workers with textile machines. You know, over the centuries, workers have fought against advancements in technology. So this is something that we've seen for a long time. But I think the difference here is this is technology that's designed to not think, and not, is sort of simulate thinking, but come up with ideas, like take away like the mental power. This isn't changing. It's not manufacturing something.
Yeah, it's not an advancement in technology. It's completely overdoing the way that the world has worked for the last thousands of years.
Right. And the writers are worried that when they come back for their next contract, the companies would be in a position to just say, you know, no thanks, we don't need you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I talking to them, that's a real concern. So they're fighting to keep human beings writing shows. I mean, yeah. I use ChatGPT for fun sometimes.
Yeah.
But
which could now pass both the medical board and
the bar exam.
Excuse me.
That's insane. Every time they put
90%.
Yeah. Every time they put out an update, the world is excited.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh God, we're one step closer.
Yeah. So like, yeah, I think it could write a script for Abbott Elementary. You know, I mean, the sad but true. I mean, it's coming.
Right. And that's part of what the writers are fighting against. That and the way that streaming has changed things and taken down some of the royalties that they would earn. You know, it's making it difficult for writers to be able to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the old school writers who wrote on, say, Friends or Seinfeld, they're probably still paying their mortgage with those residual checks that are coming in. I mean, they're still probably doing well off those shows. But writers today, I mean, you could be writing for a super, you know, popular show like Stranger Things. You could be writing for a show that, you know, gets quietly released and nobody even watches. And they all are being paid the same. The residuals on streaming services are non-existent. So, you know, you're taking away kind of a pipeline of talent from the entertainment industry that we all count on. I mean, it's summer, so we're going to be outside, some of us. But, you know, the winter...
Without television, I mean, what do we have in life anymore?
Yeah, we're going to have to go outside.
We're
maybe
so dependent on it.
Talk to the neighbors, ride a bicycle.
The horror.
I know. I'm going to have to figure out how to do that bicycle thing again.
Did you... I saw David Zaslav, I think I'm saying it right. He's the CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery, the new, you know, parent HBO of HBO and Time Warner. For like the first time in a long time, shareholders, it was ratified, but it was like a little under 50% vote against his compensation package.
Oh, really? So they're starting to get protective about their money.
In 2021, he made $240 million.
Yeah.
Now, some of that was options, but
it's all compensation. That's a lot of money.
It's crazy.
Yeah. $240 million.
And, you know, last year he made like another 50 or something like that. And, you know, usually that's just a rubber stamp every year, executive compensation. But shareholders are like, hey, man, what the hell? And then when you compare that to these writers, you know, and like you said, I think if you get to the level of executive producer, showrunner, you make a pretty comfortable lifestyle as a writer. But that takes years of experience and years working the trenches as a, you know, staff writer, story writer, whatever it is, to get to that level. And so basically, at this point, you're creating zero opportunity for a writer, creative writer, to have a career that could, you know, that would be family sustaining.
Yeah, and I think
it's just going to be non-existent.
And part of the problem also is that the role of writers is being changed. They're trying to streamline the process for producing shows. So they just take the writers, they put them in a room, and I think that's called a pre-room. What was it? A mini room. I'm learning about this every week, but it's called a mini room that, you know, you go in, you do the writing for the show, and then you're gone, and then they produce the show. So all the writers who used to stick around and be involved in production and learn about the different
pieces
lighting, of production
and
turn out to be showrunners and producers themselves, that pipeline is being closed to them. So, you know, I think it's another concern that the writers have. So again, I mean, I said it last week, but these writers are fighting to keep human beings doing this work, thinking. You know, if we start letting, once any industry lets technology do something, it's very difficult to ever get it back.
Yeah.
And I mean, when it comes to machinery, robotics, like that can sometimes be good, sometimes be, you know, workable. But when it comes to letting things think for you and write for you and communicate as, you know, fake human beings, I think that's where they have to draw the line. So if you're out there and you're listening to this, you've got to, I mean, support these writers because they're fighting for their livelihoods. They're fighting to keep human beings producing television.
Yeah, because it's coming for us all. It's not just going to be writers. It's going to be, it's going to touch every single industry that exists today, and exists industries that don't exist today. That'll be born in the years ahead. But I saw an interesting stat. To reach 100 million users, it took Facebook, I think, like 75 months. And I saw a list of several popular, you know, Netflix,
right,
some of the most popular websites in the world. To get 100 million users on ChatGPT took 2 months.
I'm not surprised.
Two months.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, just imagine where things are going. I mean, it's just that information is just going to evolve and become faster and more efficient. I mean, right now, the sky is literally the limit, and it's daunting to think about.
Well, just wait till it starts guessing stock prices.
Yeah.
But if you are in Chicago or you're going to be around Chicago on Wednesday, the Writers Guild of America is having a rally, protest, picket outside of the NBC studios right on the north side of the river downtown. So if you're around at noon on Wednesday, come out, bring some coffee, bring a pizza. Unless it's hot, don't bring coffee. Bring iced coffee.
Donuts.
Yeah, bring some stuff out and take part and tell people that you support them. It's a really, really important thing that means a lot to them. So, you know, the Workers' Mic will be out there, and we'll be supporting these writers because their fight is, you know, it's a canary in the coal mine when it comes to artificial intelligence.
Absolutely.
So,
solidarity.
Right. Well, stick with us. We will be right back after a quick break here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on WGN 720. I'm Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson. There was a good discussion in the last segment about the writer's strike and the impact on you know, the TV shows we love, Phil.
Yes.
So you know, we were both sort of lamenting the potential of having to go outside if this carries on for too long.
Take me now, Lord.
Oh, no. My goodness! But what are you watching? What show are you hoping is not impacted?
Well,
by this?
Actually, one of my favorite shows already has been impacted, and that is Severance.
I've heard a lot of good things about that show.
Oh my gosh, it's.
It's on Apple TV Plus, right?
The production crew loves the show. I can tell. It's definitely a bit of a head twister, sci-fi, which turns some people off, but it's black comedy sci-fi, and it's such a good breakdown of the work-life balance and how absurd it can be. And I mean, the premise of the show is basically that you're a different person when you enter.
Yeah, you can't remember
your work when you go to work. And then when you leave work, then you're back to your normal everyday self who exists in your personal life. It's just that you're basically a split personality. When
so
you go to
that's
work.
Your show, huh?
It's really, really good. I mean, the cast you got Turturro,
Adam McKay,
Adam Scott. Yeah,
okay,
John
right.
Turturro, Adam Scott, Christopher Walken.
That's right.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan.
He plays a great role in it. Patricia Arquette, and then a couple people who are new who I don't know, but it's outstanding. One of the descriptions of it I heard that I thought was best, it's The Office meets Stanley Kubrick.
Okay.
And I just read that it's been shut down. They were filming season two, and because of the strike, it's off.
Right.
So,
well, they delayed.
Damn you, studios!
They delayed the production of Stranger Things, which is always one that I enjoy. I watch it at home, you know, with my family. There's always, you know, it's just a great show. It's
of course
a lot of throwback stuff.
Seen
they
everyone.
always have cool music in the shows, and it's just a lot of fun. So I'm hoping they get that back going once this thing is done.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of union news this week. We'll touch on that and then stick around because at the end of the segment, we're going to get into busting a union myth. But the news I wanted to talk about is I read that Bluebird, if you've ever ridden a school bus to school, you know that Bluebird is where it all You know, where it starts and ends. That's the manufacturer of all the school buses. So
like everyone almost, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they have the dominant market share, Bluebird, yes.
For sure.
I've never seen a non-Bluebird bus.
I think I've only ridden on Bluebirds.
Yes.
And they've
exclusive.
They're made in Georgia, and they have 1,400 employees. So they have a union election that started late this week where workers could start to vote. And I think it ends over the weekend. So we should be able to have some news next week on where this went. But 1,400 employees in Georgia, they're being led by, they're trying to join the United Steelworkers. And they are, you know, they're working to get themselves a union. So I'm throwing a shout out to the Bluebird school bus employees in Georgia.
Give them hell, guys.
Go get them. And I'm thinking also, you know, that if they get in there and these buses are union made, maybe they can figure out a way to make the windows go down.
Yeah,
all the way.
A little more WD-40.
Yeah, because you put those things, there was a line, and you know if you put it further down than that, you had a bus driver.
You're
screaming
always pitching
at you.
Your finger, trying
always.
To squeeze. Yeah, I always walked out of there with a new cut. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That was no good, and perhaps they could soften up the suspension a little bit. It used to be a game if you sat in that one single seat in the back of the bus and you went over a bump. Sometimes that kid could go flying.
I know. I'd have to wear a helmet back there.
Yeah, it was never me. I was always a little too let's say. Husky to get any air, but whatever, it was fun to try anyway. So
you would get ballast.
Just a polite request, Bluebird employees, for the next generation.
Yes, we stand with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So as promised, we are here to bust a union myth, and we don't have any fun audio features for Mythbusters, and I'm not
we could play Mr. T
one.
Again.
You know, we could always use more Mr. T. I'm going to probably listen to that on the way home today. I hope some of you will be, too.
On repeat, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The union myth of the week is that union dues are too expensive, right? It's something that you hear when workers are talking to each other about organizing, and they say, I don't want to pay the dues, or if workers are all kind of united in it, the company will often come out and say, you know, they just want your dues. This is going to cost you money. You don't want to do this. So this is a nonsense argument, and I'd like to take this opportunity to get into the numbers of why it is such nonsense. So this is going by data that is collected by the Department of Labor every year on all employees across the country, what they do, where they live, how much they make, whether they're represented by a union or member of a union or not.
Bureau of Labor Stats collects all of this.
Exactly. So they released numbers for the work year of 2022. And across the country, across all professions, union members made 18.2% more than non-union members. And that's taking into account everything from doctors to grocery store clerks and miners to construction workers to, you know, movie writers. In every industry, as an average, it's 18.2%.
Yeah, I think it's higher in the building trades.
So in construction nationally, it's more than 35%. So let's just break this down. A little bit of simple math. Let me sharpen up my pencil over here.
Let me get my notes out. All right.
If dues for a union...
3%.
If being a member of a union, let's say, can get you a raise tomorrow of 35%,
okay,
but your dues cost, what they do on average is usually about 2 to 3%,
mm-hmm,
you have to pay 3% to get a 35% raise. I'm asking you listeners, if you had this opportunity tomorrow, would you take it? If you wouldn't, I would say that you should brush up on your math a little bit.
Yeah, again, I'm no mathematician.
That's
that sounds
a good
like
deal.
A pretty good positive output.
Right, and that's
35
that's
versus
talking
three.
Wages. That doesn't get into benefits,
yeah,
you know, retirement, health care, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
if you hear somebody out there complaining about union dues,
yeah,
keep that in mind.
Yeah.
You're talking about a 2 to 3% fee that raises your wages, at worst, 18%.
Yes.
And if you're in the building trades, more than 35%.
I've never heard of anyone go bankrupt by paying union dues. Never happened.
Absolutely not. And you generally, you pay them when you're working.
Yes.
It's like taxes.
Right.
You don't pay them if you're not working.
Exactly.
So that, let's call that a union myth busted. Union dues are not too expensive. Union dues are about the best deal going out there.
Busted.
Yeah, busted. And I mean, especially when you consider the study that we featured on last week's show about the way that union membership and a union contract creates, you know, generational wealth foundations for mm-hmm. every sector of society. No matter what you do, what demographics you fall into, union membership is a good thing. It
right.
helps build a foundation for a family where your kids can have a better life than you did. You know, so if it costs 2% to get there and somebody's telling you that 2% is too much, you should think about whether or not you really want to trust that person.
Yeah, and that those 2 to 3% in union dues pay for the administration that results in the bargaining that grants you that 35% increase in your wages.
Yeah, the people,
so that's what it's going towards.
The people that are getting you, the negotiating these contracts.
Yes.
The people who are business agents or organizers that are enforcing these contracts or helping other people organize. That's where union dues go. They don't go into, companies would have you believe is just some, fat cat sitting around smoking cigars.
No, it doesn't go. It doesn't go to a political fund to support whomever.
Right.
And that's why, as we like to always point the finger at, our free riders who receive all these great benefits but don't pay union dues. And so, okay, I mean, if you think that's a good way of going through life of taking advantage of something, it's welfare for them.
Right.
Having
other people pay your way.
Exactly.
I can say in the building trades, we make no lack of clarity about who is not paying their own way.
Yes.
That usually
tends to
sort itself out on the job sites. The members take care of that themselves. So.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's, before we leave, what are you doing for your mom for Mother's Day, Phil?
We're going to go to brunch at my sister's nice. In the morning. And then rest of the day we'll be taking care of the other most important mom in my life, my wife.
Yeah.
So it's her day. She's going to get pampered.
Double duty.
Duty.
Me too. We're doing brunch later, and then planting some flowers, doing dinner, probably cooking out at home, and letting her do whatever she wants.
That sounds like a great
Sunday.
Get
away and have a quiet afternoon.
Yep.
So, all you moms out there, have a great day today, and all you people who are taking care of moms today, don't screw this one up. Show them a good time.
Pressure's on.
So, well, thanks, everybody. Again, it's Ed Maher and Phil Davidson here for the Workers' Mic. We'll be back with you again next week right here on 720 WGN.
Happy Mother's Day.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.